are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Braid and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hi.
It's Niall.
Hello.
And it's me, Brian. It sounds like all of the go's gone from Niall.
So they flipped me again.
Yes, tonight's episode is episode 36, Diavolo Surfaces. And in this episode, the bizarreness, the bizarre part of the bizarre adventure really kicks in.
Several points I was like, wait, what?
I'd forgotten about this bit in the comic, and I think
you cannot question King Crimson's fucking power after this fucking bullshit.
Yeah, I forgot about that whole thing, and I thought, oh, that's why I keep going back to John Carpenter and why I got something better than my mind, because that's fucking super. It definitely
yeah,
was.
Yeah. Definitely some body horror. Who's your man who used to do all those really good fucking body effects and that kind of thing? Like all the little technical puppets.
Oh,
Ray
Winston, yeah.
Yeah.
And such. Yeah.
Yes. Very much so, like the little makeup effects, like you say, from The Thing and everything.
Yeah. I must say, Paul Rudd being pretty casual, keeping pretty calm when a second head, but kind of crab-like pincer grows out of his turtleneck.
Well, I mean, like he's only been a turtle for a very short amount of time, so it's not like, oh, I feel weird in my body. He automatically feels weird in a turtle body, so.
Is this normal for turtles? I'm not too familiar with their life cycle.
I have a tail now. My ribs are on the outside. I really don't know what to do here.
I'm trying to remember what other weird things had happened to Polar S body in the past.
Turned into a child. A baby.
He had his tongue looped through so he had to lick a toilet. That wasn't that weird.
Possessed by an evil sword.
That's right.
Had parts of himself shaved off by a spherical void that absorbs all light and life.
And before this, he had his eye, arm, and legs punched off. He's not had a good run of it, I suppose. Being a turtle with a fucking crab growing out of you is like the least weirdest thing. It might be the most weirdest thing.
But, yeah, he acclimated. Compared to what was happening to some other people around, he seemed to have got off lightly. Not as light as the rest of the crew, who the most is like, is it Trish in Mister's body's finger starts disintegrating? I can't remember which way around.
You're right. Trish's finger in Mister's body is disintegrating. So, Mista's finger, but Trish is obviously experiencing it. Yeah.
Yes, because apparently he hadn't realized that Chariot Requiem has another power, which is apparently to rewrite the DNA of humanity and all of life on Earth.
The whole putting them to sleep and switching minds is the first part of changing them from the inside out.
Yeah. Well,
that's
like
step one, apparently.
Its base thing is it can control like spiritual energy, so it can move it around. It can amplify it, so it can like increase your stand powers. But I guess as an offshoot of that, it can also force you to ascend to a higher state of being, which is what's happening here as people erupt into masses of limbs and eyeballs, and it's quite horrifying.
I think the worst one was the person who had an eyeball grow out of their cheek, and then it quickly like moved up to where the eyeball is supposed to be beside the other eyeball.
Yeah.
And even the characters going like, it's like, oh, they don't seem to be in pain or anything. They're just writhing around on the ground.
Yeah. Well, faces start growing around people, and the faces start talking or chattering away. And I guess people just go into a catatonic state and just try to like process this.
They're not in pain. They're just in horrific existential crisis. That's all. That's fine. Walk it off.
This follows a fight with Requiem as it's trying to get its arrow back out of the turtle's mouth. Which the important part of which is that during it,
Mister in Trish's body tries to take a shot at Requiem, but his pistol explodes. And I did like that. It's a good thing I robbed a gun off a cop.
Yeah.
He has to grab the turtle and run as well after he manages to blow some holes into Requiem, just slowing it down, really. Again, very horror movie, slasher villain kind of stuff.
Yeah, but he just spend, or Mr. Interested by, he's spending the rest of the episode going, Sex Pistols, reload my gun. We can't. You're not using a revolver now. It's a government of cartridge. It takes a lot longer to reload a cartridge and put it back in the gun.
They keep specifying. They're good at moving small things like bullets. So reloading a gun, sure. Take a cartridge out, put a full one in. Easy. But like a whole clip? We don't do automatics, man. That's why we use a revolver.
Yeah.
So number 5 of the Sex Pistols thinks Diavolo's the one responsible for breaking it, proving once again that number 5 is the best of the Sex Pistols, and everyone should listen to him more.
Yeah, if there was a number 4, he wouldn't have been bullied so much and he'd be able to speak up more. But yeah, he's clearly the whatever part of the 1/6 of Mista that's actually smart. Yeah. Is number 5.
In terms of character development, I think you got to say that's top of the heap there. It's quite touching. We see that at the progression here. He's
Now
you can blow a guy's head off with confidence and be appreciated by his brethren.
But yeah, the others and Mister kind of bully him into the idea that no, it just must be wear and tear. Mister wasn't looking after the gun.
Oh, we haven't had a chance to check it. We've actually shot it a lot without like doing the regular maintenance that we, the small guys who ride bullets, do.
Yeah. As they're dealing with the mutations, Diavolo is like going, I figured out how to beat Chariot Requiem. All I need is these goons to get close enough so I can use my power. And
I do like the way that was represented. Like, you know, it goes into like the weird colors and it's King Crimson, like, basically ducked down behind everyone going, hee hee, they can't see me, kind of thing. Like, he's literally hiding as well as, he's figuratively hiding in how he's represented. Yes. I like that.
Doppio in, Butcherati's body has also succumbed to his injuries.
He's in a dead body, so that's not great for him.
But now, before giving a final, like, farewell, it's like, oh, boss, wish I could have been there for you in this last moment.
Wish you'd give me a call sometime. Your man who does Bruno's voice did a really good job of doing like a younger voice in Bruno's body, but then they kind of do the crossfade switching thing. Really good bit.
So like Diavolo, I guess, is like represented, or like, you know, I guess the remnant of his soul is there, was basically just in contained within King Crimson, and then it's possessing somebody in the rest of the group.
Yes. As they head off towards Chariot Requiem, Giorno goes, stop, nobody, nobody move. Don't get any closer to each other.
Yeah, because they'd all kind of ran to chase Requiem at that stage, because it managed to get the arrow, got away. There was also a time skip when Mr. Intrich's body climbed halfway up a pole, and like there was a time skip at that point, wasn't there? Because was it that Mr. like was about to throw the turtle and then the turtle was already on the ground, that kind of thing? I think that was the time skip.
Something like that, yeah.
There's something up. Anyway.
He turns part of the pistol into a mole to recover the missing part of the pistol as to prove whether or not Mr. and the Sex Pistols' argument about how it broke is correct. And so once he's got all the parts, they discover that it's been broken by force, and there he's going to use the same trick that Polnareff used of the dripping blood, and he's first wants to check out Mister, and Mister angrily refuses. He's going to shoot him. He's basically like arguing, what if it's you? And Giorno's going, no, it's not me. It's like, explain exactly why it's not me.
It can't be me because of how I'm in my own body right now, and none of you are.
And it can't be Polnareff because he's right next to me, and when I touch him, I can only feel the weight of one soul. So was this around the time of whatever film it is? I can't remember the name of it.
The Thing.
No, not The Thing. The one about the weight of souls in the title.
Can't think of the name of it, yeah.
Yeah, because it's not very good. 21 grams.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, I mean,
I think that's a little later.
Okay. Unless it came from like a book or something like that. It might have been like the sound of it he liked, so he was going to
use, I'm sure he probably just Yeah, the, I mean, the 21 grams experiment is from 1907, so yes.
Okay, yeah, yeah. He's we know he's researched things around then, so yeah.
Yeah, but I was thinking more of like this, one of us here is not exactly human or who they say they are. We gotta do a little test to figure it out.
With blood. Yes, very much so.
And he specifically says
the tension of walking up to people and shit. Yeah.
But he specifically says the soul, human soul has a weight. And that's how he can tell using, his stand.
Yeah, yeah. He kind of describes, like, I can infuse things with life and therefore I can sense life.
The when weight I'm of.
Yeah. Within touching range. Yeah, yeah.
So if you're too heavy, he knows there's an extra soul in there.
And I mean, like, I get Giorno's thing. I was like, well, it can't be me because of plot reasons of me being in my own body kind of thing. But I do get Mista's kind of thing. I was like, well, what if it's you? What if you've just told us that lie? It's not like you can test yourself kind of thing.
And then like,
we have to believe it.
Look, stop it, you two. Just come and test me, Giorno.
We don't have time. He's slowly getting away. Because, yeah, like Requiem is just walking down the street, right? He's not in a full pelt at this stage.
The blood drips skip a few drops, and then it's like a very complicated, like, whose body am I coming out of?
Yeah, yeah.
He appears to be coming out of this body, but no, it was actually coming out of this body because, well, the time skipped, he moved, Trish closer in Mister's body. So it looked like it was coming out of Trish's body.
Trish's body, yes.
Yeah. But it didn't make sense then because, of course, he would more easily bond with whatever Trish was supposed to because that's his daughter. And then you can, then it'd be easier to kind of bond with, or it'd be the most likely like, soul that he would like bond with or cohabit with.
It's also going to be hard for her to sense where he is when he's right fucking there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, good, hiding space and him like jumping around, that was some pretty great stuff. So he hops out, punches, Giorno's arm off and his plan was to get Trish to bring out her stand because he can't move her body without like assuming direct control or some of that, but he can grab her arms and legs of her stand and like make her in Mister's body. Run around like a puppet, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
That's the logic.
Which unfortunately we then don't get to see as they're running.
yeah. That might have been a lot to try and animate, but it would have been great.
A lot of long distance shots when they're running around to the streets of Rome.
Yeah. It would have been kind of good if it was like a really freaky kind of puppet movement.
And I like how they're like, hey, he's about going to attack us. He's doing a time skip. Get ready to attack us. And then the time skip ends and he's running down the street. like the moment of them having to go, what? Oh no, he's after the arrow. Quick.
And if he's after the arrow, he must have figured out a way of getting it off Requiem.
Yes. And which is also ludicrous. But I suppose at this point, Requiem's power is already so ridiculous. It's the way around it is, I guess, fair.
Yeah, we're going to have to try and break that down because I think I understand most of it, but I just want to make sure.
So he's figured that basically it casts a shadow in the direction that you're looking at it. Because it's not its shadow, it's the shadow of your soul. And so...
So if it's casting a shadow on your soul, it's just the shadow / reflection of your own soul. So its actual physical presence is behind your own head.
Yes.
Yeah. And also because it's a reflection, you're basically attacking yourself, which is why your own power turns against you when you try to approach it.
Yeah, it's like a self-defense mechanism. Yes. You're attacking your soul's shadow, your stand's shadow, so your stand defends itself, but the actual Requiem is a fucking thing behind your own head.
Yeah, because something has to cast the light to create that shadow.
And it's behind, like he says, like the shadow would appear in a different thing no matter where you're looking at it. And also from different people's points of view, it's not actually casting a shadow. That's your soul's shadow or something. Right, okay, I do understand it in its weirdness. Okay.
Yes, because it was the start of the description, I was like, oh, he's gonna take it to somewhere where there's no light. I didn't realize that he was going to reach behind his head and destroy another light source.
And even like the guy shouting, I was like, he's hit something behind his own head, you know, as they're trying to catch up to him. It's just like they're kind of reacting, what is happening? That's good.
But, so he's got the arrow, but JoJo's rebuilt his arm. Giorno has another plan, and that is, well, they're still summoned by blood, on his hand, so therefore I can use my power to turn that blood into, which type of ants would you say they are?
I assume termites.
Termites, more so.
Cause he says ants, but I assume they're termites because they eat straight through. Like I keep forgetting to mention that the stick of the arrow keeps like lengthening and shortening depending on the shot.
But now it's quite short because it's been chewed all the way through by his termites.
Yeah, now it's much shorter.
I imagine that's taken straight out of the comic, much like that doorway in part four. which varied in size depending on who was going through it. I always forget that despite him having no control over these animals, they always seem to do exactly what he wants them to do.
Like read up on nature documentaries and such so much that, yeah.
Well, we can compel by instinct to chew through wood, so with that, well, that's going to, like, get the right tool for the job, so to speak. which insatiable appetite or instinct in the animal kingdom can I use to my own ends in this situation to escape this death trap?
they gnaw through. Where does the rubber... That comes
Obviously Mista in Trish's body was shooting bullets at him, but like as he was running away, but he was like deflecting the bullets and everything. And where it comes in is when he reaches down to get the dropped arrow, he realizes his hand has already been shot.
Yeah, that he thinks he's deflected, but actually...
Trish is med soft. Yes. And so they bounced... They technically didn't bounce off him. They bounced through him or something. Is
something
that how it
like
works?
That. And then she releases the energy. So when he goes to reach for the arrow after it's fallen on the ground, it bounces back towards our heroes. And Mister's like, I've got it. It's going to go out. Even if it goes over my head, I'm standing in the way. So he can't get it. Trish like has a speech about how she's taking control of.
That was a pretty good speech, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Diavolo has one here as well about how well Bruno's done for. He can't believe he betrayed him, and he can't believe he learned his name.
Mm.
But that's as far as you get in Bruno. And so his reply to Trish though is to punch her in the stomach. Well, no, claw her in the stomach, and essentially just. But it is like a punch because it throws her over the top of Mister's head.
So, yeah, so obviously he's within range because Mista's body, inhabited by Trish and Diavolo, is flying over Mista's head. I do like the way they're just representing Diavolo just with his stand as well, because it doesn't make sense to do the Trish's face over Mista's body or anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, your stand is like representation of your spirit energy or soul or now. So he hasn't got a physical body anymore, or rather someone that's in it at the moment. So.
Well, yeah, no, it just works quite well visually is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, it's too fun. Sick of seeing this fucking King Crimson guy just mess everybody up. It's like, so.
Also, he's in the scene. So I guess that would be kind of confusing. Diavolo's body, I mean. Yeah.
I think that's the key thing. Though we do get like an over shot of Bruno's face over
at the end, going like, Trish!
That's what is he going to get the arrow? Is Trish going to die? What will happen? Is it King of Kings next week?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm still trying to remember who, because the way they draw, particularly King Crimson, reminds me of a Marvel artist, or possibly a Marvel inker, and I still can't put my finger on it.
Hmm. Like a contemporary one, or
not necessarily a contemporary one. Maybe a contemporary one of when the comic came out in the first place. But I feel like there's been a couple of other stands they've sort of done the lines in that style.
Could have been someone reading series. JoJo. It could be the other way around.
Could be the other way around. Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, highly enjoyable, and yeah, I think the surprise of like Chariot Requiem's powers being super duper weird, was very satisfying.
Yeah, they're nearly very, very cheap, but it's more so, holy fucking shit, that's really odd to try and think around. You really have to be able to like think in fucking curves to be able to fight Stanton's, man.
Yeah, well, what's odd is it's like, it's got so these all these like very strange powers, like almost omnipotent powers, but it doesn't really have any kind of villainous or heroic goal in mind. It just is.
Yeah,
and that makes it kind of scarier because you can't reason with it or talk to it or trick what its reasoning is. It just exists and it's just going to change the world. Maybe for the better, maybe for the worse, but it'll change the world.
There's someone in JoJo Line who has a shadow based stand as well, and I can't remember exactly how that worked. Because obviously, the thing about JoJo Lion is there's lots of people who are equivalents of other characters from earlier.
Like a variant on that person's power or something. Yeah.
But I think that's one like avoiding treading on their shadow or something.
Oh, so doing like a variant of, I can't remember. Is that a kid's game? I feel like it has a name.
It is a kid's game. I can't remember what it's called
either. Doesn't matter.
He's a kid who's got the power as well.
Okay, just go straight up for the reference. All right.
And Junkin' Kid, reborn with a new, even more irritating power.
Holly Jumble, I now have no idea how many episodes are left. Because it's clearly going into next seasons, but I don't think there's enough to go for an entire season.
Yeah, maybe it's doing like a season and a bit. It's doing, I'm guessing the way it's going, it's doing an odd number.
Yeah.
That's the only way I could see it. Unless they're just going to adapt a bunch of, your man goes to the lure for that kind of thing. I really don't see it happening.
Yeah, slap those OVAs up.
But there is as mentioned before, a kind of epilogue bit that precedes, in the course of the comic, like, there's a final fight and then there's this epilogue bit, which is, more like a story from the past that resonates with how the ending goes, and then they have the actual ending. So as I was mentioning, they kind of could stick that on as a fucking bundle in with the manga volume or the home video release OVA exclusive thing.
Right.
Which I would think that that's what they would do, and then they could, because it wraps up relatively quickly besides that.
Yeah, so apparently this takes us up to chapter 583.
Of how many?
The last chapter is 594.
Oh, okay.
And there was five chapters in this. So I guess two more episodes, maybe? Or maybe they wrap it all up next week.
Just power through the last 15 of it.
Yes. Well.
I hope they don't rush it, because I've really been enjoying how they've been doing it so far. It's like, this episode was really good for the tension and everything. It was really palatable.
I think maybe two episodes, if they're going to put everything in and not...
Yeah, not squeeze anything out.
Because I think we've learned from watching Karakuri Express, about six chapters, five or six chapters an episode is your ideal pacing for this stuff. Whereas I believe I read somewhere that Seven Seas, which just went up on Netflix, goes through 16 volumes in 12 episodes.
Jesus. Okay.
Which is early Karakuri Express speed, but for the entire series. Karakuri Circus speed, rather. I enjoy the first episode of it, but I'm not inclined necessarily to watch any more of Seven Seas.
That's the case for all Netflix.
Exactly, yes. We did discuss that on our podcast. Watch goes in my list, watch one episode. Righty-ho. Anything else to add on this episode of JoJo's?
It's almost over already. Single tear.
Yeah. I'm gonna be sad to see it go. I'm really enjoying it. When I hear JoJo's been described as like a shonen fighting manga or anime or whatever, I'm kind of like, well, yeah, but I mean, like, this is technically a fight, but like, how do you even like map this shit out? I love the interbreak like diagram of who's in whose body. And kind of shit. It's just like, okay, let me just get this straight. He's in that, but also in that. Okay, grand. No one's in Requiem. All right, cool.
Yeah, it's more like one of those board games where you keep switching roles.
Yes. like One Night Ultimate Werewolf.
Yeah.
Joestar Group, close your eyes.
one of you is a vampire, another one's a
Dio,
super vampire.
Dio, can open your eyes.
Two people open their eyes, lock eyes, and go like, oh, that's how it is.
Speedwagon, keep your eyes open at all times and record everything you see.
But yeah, like it's technically like a fighting shonen thing, but it's so weird at its best, and the characters are just great. And I wouldn't say this has been my favorite arc, but the characters have all been really fucking solid, the core cast. So yeah, I'm gonna really miss them when it's gone.
Now it's time to say goodbye to some other people as we make our way through all the other anime we watched this week in the show within a show. It's time for Let's Go! Let's Go Dororo! Episode 24, Dororo and Hyakkimaru. In which the show gets to the same end point as the manga. But I'm not sure you necessarily take the same messages from it as you would the manga.
No. Well, I feel like it's trying to be more like a definitive ending rather than the manga, which is like further adventures.
Yeah, I watched this and I enjoyed it, but at the same time at the end I was like, it feels like a better complete story than the manga. But I was like, is that just a trick that consumption of other media has played on me my entire life? Because when I break it down in terms of themes, I think the manga is a lot better. Particularly when it comes to Hyakkimaru.
The manga's going to have more time. Like, written stuff is always going to have more time.
It's not that. Attitudes of the... Because in the comic, Hyakkimaru, there's never the sense that I'm getting my body back is his driving force. It's I'm killing those 48 demons is his driving force. And hey, look at this cool... These cool prosthetics I've got.
Seems pretty jazzed to be like a fucking Sengoku era cyborg samurai.
And I guess that's Tezuka's medical background.
Just thinking like, hey, check it out. Like, yeah, false limbs are actually pretty cool.
Exactly, yes. I think that is a better message than necessarily, I'm getting my body back. I reject my disability. I refuse to listen to the man who's telling me not to walk down the path of evil, and that guy will burn to death for his love of me.
Penance, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's the idea that both of them, obviously they're adapting the same plot to some extent with variations, but like the comic seems to be more like you say, it's like, hey, wouldn't it be cool to have like fucking like robot arms that had swords in them and shit, and you could like stab a dude, it'd be pretty cool, and you could be making quips and being a cool guy all the time. Whereas the show is investigating, is like, well, they took the theme as taking the body parts back or earning your body back, but what does it mean to have a body? What does it mean to be a person? That kind of thing. It's obviously digging deep into those.
I don't think it does. That's the problem. I don't think it does dig deep.
I think if it had more time, it would do a lot better, because I really like the idea of, and they only cover it like very slightly, but you get to see Hyakkimaru become more, and act more human rather than like this weird feral animal thing.
Yeah, but I feel like the comic.
Genji smell, and it's like, oh shit, things stink? No one told me things stink. You know, each new sense he gets back changes how he interacts with the world.
Yeah, what's that saying about people who've got each of those individual disabilities? That I think it dehumanizes him in the way that even though the comic version is like a big old jerk, he is happy with who he is at the start of the comic, and he's happy with who he is at the end of the comic.
I think in the show, it's not that Hyakkimaru is unhappy with who he is. I don't think he even has the idea behind it. It's just like, oh, well, if that's mine, then I should probably get it.
Yeah, well, he approached some acceptance of his lot there a few episodes back, but you could still see that, you know, I could live like a happy life with Dororo as I am now, which is actually pretty good. But then when he found, no, there's still limitations to what I can do, and I don't want to live a life that I can't live to the fullest, and I feel wrong as well, because I feel like somebody has denied me that, and that's pissing me off, frankly. what's this emotion you call anger? And that sets him off.
I think it's trying to connect that like physical loss to the, can I let this go if I don't see it through? That kind of way. Yeah. It's trying to connect the physical loss and the emotional loss. Because obviously, I feel like despite the fact he lost, like, what was it, fucking 12 body parts, he kind of lost a lot emotionally as a person. Like, he actually was, he had more than he thought he did. What with having two mams, one who actually raised him.
Two mammies have come there in the end to try and comfort him. Just at the end bit.
Yes, I think it's more their use I am more annoyed about than...
I feel like they're both, like, what's the surgeon and the executioner? Jukai. He's getting badly done because it's kind of like, well, he did, like, kill a lot of people. He did crucify a whole bunch of people. And then with Hyakumaru's mother, it's kind of like that. She did give up her son to demons.
Yeah, see, that's why. But the comic ending much better because they all survive except for the brother who died like halfway through the comic. And the thing is, Hyakumaru just rejects both his birth parents and says, "I only have one parent," and that's whatever his name is, the
Jukai. I didn't feel like they needed to be punished because I feel like they've come to terms. They're kind of growing. Both of his mothers are kind of learning about the thing they've done wrong before for Jukai before he came up with the mother, the things he'd done wrong, and that he's trying to be better in the world now.
Yeah,
trying to, like, have his penance for it. And his mother is like, it's not that she's suffered or anything. It's just that she knows what she did was wrong and she would do it again. But like the fact that she's willing to fucking take that onto herself.
That being said, it is ambiguous as to whether they did actually both.
I feel like they out and out say it's like, well, they died or something.
Yes,
like
that's only the people who saw that's only from Dororo's point of view.
I kind of wish they left the line out because then it would have been entirely ambiguous. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah. Dororo doesn't see them die. They just sees them,
building collapse.
The building collapse between them, yes.
Hmm.
But no, I just prefer that ending in the comic of him rejecting. Because, again, in the comic is different because when they're not in it so much, and when they were in it before, and this is the other thing I like about it in the comic, is Daigo tries to bring Hyakumaru back into his home, and it's Toamaru who's the one who forces the wedge between them.
Yeah, again, like, I think they were just, like, interpreting a lot of that, the original text differently. Like, obviously with Toamaru in this one, I did like the fight, obviously, but the conversation between himself and his brother where he's saying to his brother, is like, yeah, you're like me, you're missing something too. And I like the way you can interpret the difference of that. Like, was he missing his mother's love? Was he missing having
validation.
A brother? Validation or the fact that his brother was, like, cut out of his life. He would have had an older brother. And yeah, that he was trying to fill this hole in his life with all these other things. And, he kind of comes to terms with that as well in the end.
I do like how you get a sliver of the original manga's ending in him confronting his dad.
That was really nice. That did show a lot of growth in the character. Yeah.
Yeah. I did quite like that because it would imply in Daigo's character that he becomes himself to be in the right. I'm the Lord. My spec's right. I'm going to provide for the people in that way. And you get the sense that demon pact or no demon pact, it would have ended like this anyway, with his fiefdom being invaded by a rival army and turned to ruin. Like,
well, yes, they make sure you know that by telling you at the end that you're only a few years away from the warring nation.
Things were fucked now. Oh, no. Things are about to get fucked.
Yeah. But as well, like, his own ambition will eventually be his downfall nonetheless. If it was a pact with the underworld made or not, it would have ended this way.
Yes. His regret is that maybe if he hadn't bothered making it, his son would have been able to lead. He would have just taken another generation for...
Or he would have had someone of, like, Hyakumaru's will and strength and everything. It's just like, well, maybe you could have fucking done a better job of this, but I gave you up.
Meanwhile, Dororo has got the great idea of, let's just fix it with money. It feels like a terrible plan, the way
I think it's a bad plan. It's like, oh, you know, all these lords and samurai and shit is really fucked. It's like, yeah, it is. How about capitalism? It's like, no, that's not fixing
it. No, you're talking about a socialist utopia last episode. What happened to that idea?
And then we can just buy whatever we need, because I got a mountain full of money. I'll be back in a bit.
Yeah. Well, do you have enough for the whole class, Doro? Did you bring enough for the whole class? No?
I think probably. There was a lot of money in that mountain. Yes.
Everyone gets like a fiver. Go make your way in life.
At least Doro was smart enough not to tell them where the treasure was.
Yes. Yeah.
I'll be back. Never.
Suckers! Yeah. I get what you mean by like the preferring one ending over the other, but I thought this one ended well for the themes that they wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I just feel like those themes are retrograde compared to what was in, particularly the retrograde attitudes to disability compared to the original comic.
That's fair. Yeah. And I do like the original theme. And I mean, like it's slightly, in here with Hyakkimaru not taking revenge. When given the opportunity, when like egged on to fucking take it, going like, nah, I'm done with that kind of thing. It, in the comic, obviously it has that where he's just going like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. And I think I'm more mad that, I didn't notice it. And I still feel like this is a well-told story. And I feel like, am I just getting tricked into, it's the old prestige television trick. And you think, if we tell this story in a classy enough way, he'll be tricked into thinking it's a good story. But they do tell it in a classy way, and it's very well made, and I highly recommend it, despite my reservations.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's still pretty good. It's, I think, a better average than how some series end on the regular.
It didn't go on over long. It didn't outstay its welcome. It did everything it set out to do. But I mean, like, obviously you're disagreeing a little with what it set out to do or how it set out to do it.
I feel like we've been spoiled with good endings lately. I mean, just looking down my, like, recent queue on the old Crunchyroll here, like, Sarah Zanmai had a great ending. Down a bit further, like, Mob Psycho 100, season 2 had a great ending. So, you know, having something like this, which is, you know, it's pretty good. It's not the perfect encapsulation of the series as some of those other endings were that I mentioned, but it's still pretty good. And I would say better than the average. Because I have finished some of those Netflix shows that we alluded to earlier. And some of those don't end too great. They're fine, but they pale in comparison to some of the proteins that I've seen recently.
Hmm.
Next up, it is One Punch Man Season 2, Episode 11, Everyone's Dignity, in which Garou fights one group of superheroes, catches his breath, has to fight another superhero, and that gets interrupted by two more superheroes showing up to beat him up. Meanwhile,
it really makes you want to feel for him, doesn't it?
It does.
Gotta kill that Garou.
Meanwhile, King is letting Saitama feel like he could have won a video game, but of course, he's not actually going to let him win it.
Did it feel good when you thought for a second that you were going to win, and then I just like absolutely mashed you into the ground? Did that feel okay?
Lies the lesson.
And I just want to make sure, because this is, it's getting close to, I mean, it's kind of getting closer and closer to where the English Shonen Jump is with it. We've not had the follow-up on Zombie Man yet, have we?
No.
Okay, I guess that's next episode.
Like, he disappeared last episode and we haven't seen him since.
So that's where we get the explanation of what's happening to Garou towards the end of this episode, when his hair starts changing colour and one of his eyes...
Oh, when he does Kaioken, yeah, sure.
Where his eyes changes colour and he grows sharp teeth.
See, I was wondering about that. I was like, did he just get punched in the eye really hard and his eyes gone all bloodshot or something?
Initially, I think, but now...
But then the hair changed colour and I was like, okay, this is clearly something else.
But now it's sort of like become a component of whatever process he's undergoing.
Yeah. I think it'd be next step. It's the Zombie Man thread is what explains a lot of stuff. Garou, they're not explaining Garou, but what they're explaining explains what's happening to Garou.
Right.
And additionally, it may explain how Saitama got the way it was as well.
Okay, cool.
At least until other possibilities crop up.
Unless we get maybe like one day the actual explanation is something stupid and it is just, he just does weight training every day and it just works. It's a good plan. It's a solid plan. He just sticks with it. He's got a lot of dedication. That's how we know that.
Every day. you have to do it every day.
And while I really enjoyed this episode, it did feel like that, well, they still can't do a good genus fight.
I enjoyed the fight because I was like, oh, you guys are actually trying. Okay. That's all right. Yeah. I like some of the things of like him, like exploding himself back standing. Some of it worked. Visually.
Yeah. The stuff with Death Gatling and the other guys, I really enjoyed. And I think I quite enjoyed when, Bang and Bomb showed up.
Yeah.
But I just can't get on with how they're doing.
Is it the CG arms? Is that really bugging you?
I think so. Yeah.
It is kind of annoying. All right. Because I even like the thing of he was about to explode on him, but he kind of puts the other heroes to his back, and Genos has to close his fist on the explosion. I was like, oh, that would have been so much better if that was animated, but like timing and pacing, I was like, this is right. But yeah, visually, I know this can look so much better.
And we get a little bit of a flashback to young Garrow, of him defending Crab. What was it, Crab?
Crab Lantern.
Yeah, I can't remember. Some crab monster that he was.
Is he the first guy that the man? I became a crab monster because I ate too much crab and turned into a crab man.
He was only trying to protect the sea. And then him showing up at, Bang's dojo to learn how to become stronger. And we see the fella from the, martial arts tournament when he was younger.
So apparently he just looks like a nerd whenever he's not yes. in a martial arts tournament, which is great. good stuff.
Which adds to the sense, like, yeah, Bang wants to defeat Garrow. I think obviously it's the old martial arts thing of, like, he feels like he's let Garrow down in some way for Garrow to become like this, so it's gotta be.
I taught you how to fight, but I didn't teach you why to fight.
I must seal your fists.
Yeah, yeah.
It's his responsibility. Meanwhile, other monsters show up to recruit Garrow. Which Garrow's having.
Yeah, they were interfering with his fight. And he was like, what the fuck, monsters, fuck off. Like, I'm fighting this guy.
And meanwhile, Genos is like, no, he's in league with the Monster Association.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever Genos is away from Saitama, you get even more of an idea of why Saitama's just annoyed at him all the time.
Leap to conclusions and everything, yeah.
Here's a rent on time, but God.
He does the dishes as well, so,
yeah, otherwise, highly enjoyable episode. As I've mentioned last week, the sort of the face turn of Garrow, even though he's still an enemy to the heroes, comes on stronger this time because he protects the kid from,
He protects the kid, like, kicks all those guys' asses in like a really nice, again, it wasn't as good as it could be, but really nice choreography, but then the kids, kind of looking at him kind of differently after he wrecks those guys. Yeah.
Not following this on TV, but this episode I looked just for that fight because I quite enjoy it in the comic because it's not often you get a confrontation that is kind of evenly matched. Like, there's loads of guys, but Garrow can take them all with a bit of ingenuity. It's like different. Well,
he did get his shit kicked in beforehand. Yeah, you get to see him work through it and, like, use each of them to take each other out, that kind of thing.
That's why it's what's satisfying when he does recover and does beat them all, even with their perfectly coordinated team. It's like, no, I'll just be perfectly, use that coordination against you and just interfere with everything.
The glasses support guy's background as well. He was another guy inspired by Saitama.
He stops all of every single one of Death Gatling's bullets in order to protect the kid who's still in the house, the secret base, because Death Gatling doesn't believe that he's protecting a kid. So the prejudice against monsters, which ties into his flashback, his school friends being prejudiced against monsters. Except, of course, now he's learning that monsters are a bunch of jerks as well. Except, of course,
everyone's a jerk. Yeah, that is.
Armored gorilla turned over a new leaf. So it is possible.
It's the idea that I guess you can be a dick, but as long as you learn from it, you don't get punched into oblivion by Saitama. And other than that, it's just like, you can come back from it, but it's not one or the other side is good. It's just being good is the right thing to do, whether you change to that or not.
Yeah, there's also the question, still like the question of is Saitama's reason for being a hero a particularly good reason, as was touched on last week. But like,
I think it's a better reason than most other fucking heroes, I think is the way it's presented.
Yes. Because the argument in this episode is that Death Gatling is obsessed with the ranking system.
To the point where he only brought A rank guys just to prove a point that A rank guys can make it too.
Yes. Boy, that goddamn MI mask would get out of the way. I could be an S rank guy tomorrow, but.
Yes. I guess that's partially caused by MI mask in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
But maybe he thinks, perhaps rightly, that these guys don't deserve to be S class.
Mm. And as well, you know, he's like the top A class guy, but he's like probably realistically, according to their system, probably quite high up in the S's,
yes.
Based on recent chapters of the comic.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the idea that he's staying in A just to gatekeep, essentially, and Death Gatling might be staying in A out of spite, just because it's like, hey, A's can make it too.
Yeah, but he hasn't got this kind of strength of character of his. He's quite devious. He's quite ruthless, which, you know, can be qualities you can have in a hero when fighting monsters, but he doesn't have like that nobility, I guess, we want.
Yeah, he's got no compassion because we see when the monsters surrender, the aliens surrender, that he just murders them.
Mm.
And he kills that caveman who escaped as well.
Oh no, that Captain Caveman. He could have been a hero. He could have been swayed to your side.
Exactly, because he wasn't even a monster. He was just a defrosted caveman who escaped. I'm trying to think. Most of the S-class guys aren't like complete psychopaths. I mean, even the ones we warned against, I mean, Metal Knight seemed like he was at least reasonable. He had the more reasonable approach about, like, yeah, don't risk all the superheroes just because you want the money. Which is terribly, like, pragmatic and unfortunate for that kid. But yeah, it's like he's the one who sees the greed and the motivations of the Committee of the Hero Association.
Which is weird because he obviously has his own greed and motivations. Yes. Like, I'm just fighting this meteor to test out my new weapon system. I don't give a fuck. Yeah.
But that'll be more on that in probably two seasons' time. Because I'm going to guess most of the next season will be just them fighting the Monster Association.
Okay.
Because it's drawn out heavily in the updated version of the comic.
Yeah. Mm. Like, episode-long fight between Flashy Flash and those two ninja dudes, for instance.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if it looks good, I'm guessing that's not really a problem, though.
Phoenix Man and Child Emperor as well.
Mm.
Child Emperor gets a giant robot he doesn't have in the original version of the comic. Moving on to Karakuri Circus, episode 36, The Curtain Falls.
Ooh.
Another show wrapping up.
Encore, encore.
Well, yes, they have an encore.
they do, actually.
They do have an encore in the episode. Which is one of the spots where, again, it's like, they couldn't do a full adaptation because it's like over multiple double page spreads in the comic, the encore.
Mm.
But they kind of like had to work around those shots because they had to cut out loads and loads of characters from the encore.
It looked surprisingly empty, like fucking Trotsky fucking edited out of the photo.
A silhouette with a question mark on it, like a character you got to unlock in a fighting game.
Yeah. Sir not appearing in this film.
Yeah.
But the bulk of the episode, though, is Masaru versus Faceless. Because he's not going to tell him how to get rid of Xenopher. Let's duel.
Why would I tell you that, you idiot? Let's fight with puppets.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, he's about to stab Masaru at one point, and then just Shirigali Dog saves Masaru. Which I think is where... The doubt first sets into Faceless's head.
So, like, Masaru has been fairly convincing in his talking while fighting. I think he's using the jack-o'-lantern puppet, and he's using, like, a new white Arlequin that hasn't been broken, obviously.
Yeah.
But Masaru is, like, fairly convincing of his status. And the thing is, like, and it's kind of great, and I don't think he's doing it on purpose, but he's mentioning all the ways in which he and Faceless are alike and how he's chosen to not be a dick about it.
Yes.
Like, it's like, hey, you love Eleonora, so why did you leave her to another guy? And it's like, well, I mean, you know, like, I want her to be happy and she loves him. And I mean, like, he fell in love with her before I did. So, and it's like, well, that's like me. I fell in love with that girl centuries ago first and my brother wouldn't listen to me. So it's all like appealing to him and obviously gets through to the dog, but not to Faceless.
Yes. And then when the dog leaps in front of the dagger that he's about stabbing Master in his head. Yeah. Then Faceless is like, oh, what? No. Yeah. He doesn't get a moment to vocalize that because then, the one remaining member of the four new head puppets
was secretly inside the maid in the space shuttle all along. Oh, goddamn.
But destroys all the new Francines that Faceless has built because, hey, he doesn't need them because she's here now to be his girlfriend.
Hey, Lord Faceless, would you say you love me? Of course I love you, sweetie. Why would you ever ask such a thing? As weird, because the other puppet said, like, you love me like a tool. So how about you say that you don't love Eleonora and you love me instead? Also, I've rigged this place to blow if you fucking say anything else.
The face, the close-up of her face is fantastic.
The heavily shadowed, like, yes. Threatening face. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but also, like, it's like the threatening, wouldn't say boo to a goose face. It's like, trying to pretend to be innocent, but is like absolutely diabolical.
Yeah, yeah.
And he can't bring himself, and so he uses his, dismantle technique to dismantle her, but not before she doesn't die, before she sets off the bombs, which then throws.
And stabs him in the gut. Yeah.
Yeah, throws the spaceship, out of orbit. And they go crash into Earth, right into where all the remaining humans are.
Going to crash right specifically into the space shuttle launch base. Master's like, oh no, we have to change course. And Faceless is like, no, we don't. Fuck it, I don't care. It doesn't matter. He's like, no, I got to change course. And they're like, yeah, you can. We need to fix the boosters. Like he has his AI answer the questions for him. He's like, yes. AI, you answer the questions because I'm not going to fucking tell this kid. I hate this kid. Whatever. But the fact that he let the AI answer all the questions, like, oh yeah, you just need to fix these boosters, cause they're out of alignment, but it takes 3 hours to put the spacesuit on. We don't have 3 hours. So, and since they both wrecked each other's puppets, Faceless decides, all right, I'll help you out, kid. All right. We'll take the top half of my puppet and put it on the bottom half of your puppet. And he's giving him like tips on how to control the toes better with the strings so he can walk along the outside of the spaceship. And that's all reminding him. It was like, hey, this is kind of like that time myself and my brother did a puppet show all those years ago, yes. Several bodies ago.
I like the fact that all through this, right to the end, his Faceless won't admit anything to Masaru.
He's like a child all the way fucking through. He's super childish. Like he's not going to admit that he did anything wrong or anything. Yes.
And it's kind of, I like the way that Masaru and, Griffin are like kind of understanding of that. It's like, this is what we're going to have to work with.
You got a little kid and a childish little toy animal that have to act like the adults in the room to this, like several times grown up man who's acting the most childish. Yeah.
The way to, cure Xenopher is Eleonora has to sing.
Yeah. She has to sing that song that, the original sang and that like changes the programming in the nanites or something.
Yes.
And they just broadcast it all over the world and that kind of thing.
Yep. And, it turns out there is an escape pod, which Griffin and Master are going to use, but then in the end, Griffin, like, closes the hatch on top of Master because he's going to stay here and keep Faceless company as he dies.
Well, the other thing was Master was like, come on, Faceless, you can escape too. And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm, like, I kill, like, a lot of people, dude. They're not going to be happy with me on Earth. And also, fuck them. I don't like them. And he's like, come on, you can join the circus. We'll start a puppet show. And Pacis is just like, kid, you believe in me more than you should, kind of thing.
Yes.
So he's just going to stay on the spaceship and go down with the ship.
Yes, go down crying as Elinore sings and he makes his hideous tongue grin.
His hideous tongue grin in apology and also like grabbing Griffin and kind of yes. hugging it and going like, it's like, I'm actually glad you stayed because I actually hate being alone. That's why I make puppets. What's his last thing he says is like, sorry, brother, I was wrong or something.
That's
like
it,
that.
Yes, yeah.
He can finally admit it. Yeah.
Yeah, when there's no one to hear him.
As he burns up in the atmosphere. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then it goes to like how many years later after we see everyone wake up?
Like six or something like that?
Yeah, and we see again, because the time we didn't get to see everybody else's endings, we only get to see Narumi and Elinore's, and then Masaru's right at the end as we see, oh yeah, the best ass pull is in Masaru, Narumi and Elinore's ending, when it turns out that the arm that Masaru was hugging at the end of episode 3,
yeah,
he sent to a cryonics company in the US to be frozen, and so therefore Narumi has got his
arm.
Who would
have thunk it, huh? Says Narumi, it's like the stuff they have today, and now I can put you in a headlock. Ho ho! We are a married couple going through a war torn country as a circus, fighting crime and entertaining the children.
Yes. Meanwhile,
I mean, like that sounds like a good show. I'll be honest, but yeah.
Meanwhile, in Europe, two children are running away from terrible-looking men, and they are saved by a man in a dog costume. And this time, the man in the animal costume is Masaru.
He looks a lot more like Ushio from Ushio and Dora.
Yes.
But yeah.
And then everyone comes out and takes a bow.
Yeah, the curtain literally falls, it's animated, and then we just have everyone come out and just get second round of applause, and everyone, all your favorite characters, like that murderer, and that person who murdered them. I'm just standing hand in hand, taking in the adulation of the audience.
They were only actors, Dwayne, didn't they? Kill those people. They didn't actually
only puppets.
They
said
a virus
real.
Upon the world.
Yeah, even the dead sister who we only ever got to saw in silhouette in a tiger's mouth.
Wait, was she in it as well? Because I don't know what
yes.
she looks like.
No, she looks exactly like Elise.
That tiger's mouth looks so real.
There's two Elises yeah. holding hands, and I was like, oh, that must be the sister.
Yeah, see, there's sometimes I was like, wait, so that's Elinore. No, wait, that's not Elinore. That's Doll Francine number one, number two? Hold
yeah,
on.
I think some people are in there twice.
Multiple people are in there twice because, like, you know, you get the... the Jin and Yin, obviously. And initially I thought, oh, there's Narumi. Wait, no, that's not Narumi. That's, you're just trying to keep track of who's who, but sometimes it's a guy with exactly the same face.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, Faceless is there beside himself twice, but I mean, like, that's in two different bodies, so it counts, I think, is how it works.
Well, no, they're played by different actors, so.
Weren't they played, all the faceless guys played
yeah,
by the same guy?
I know, but I mean, in
you mean as the stage production? Yeah, of course.
I didn't check.
It's filmed as Shigeru Genus. Or was it?
I didn't check whether the AI was also Megumi Hayashibara. Because I feel like he should have been.
That would have been a good get, yeah.
And she's around. You might as well get to voice one more character while you're at it. Because obviously that
it would have made sense as well in context. Sure.
Yeah, that was the big thing of having like all this. I think that's a fortune teller robot in the comic.
Okay.
It's like a fortune teller karakuri. So it's like the torso, but it doesn't have anything except a table.
Yeah, like that thing in Big.
Yeah, yeah. Or that old one, which was the, what was it like the amazing, chess playing automaton, which is actually a guy inside
yeah,
it operated.
Like was it like a short guy or like a guy with no legs who could fit inside the box or
yeah.
something like that? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the automatic Turk or something like
that. That was it. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. If that's not it, that's close to it. Yeah.
Yeah. This was a good ending to a series which is 3/5 good.
I'm as surprised as you were.
Yeah.
But no, it ties everything up thematically. It was just a bumpy ride getting there. Particularly those episodes between 4 and 13, barring the first flashback. But yeah, it's like the stuff which we could have had, I guess, in the comic, Min Jia wins an Oscar, but they never established that she was an actress in the first place, so
yeah,
it would be weird having that bit at the end.
Min Jia won an Oscar? What? when they were doing like the bow thing, like some of the characters there, like obviously it has the muscly soldier guys, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. Even though you guys were in earlier in this episode, I forgot you guys exist.
Yeah.
It had the golem puppet and the pirate fucking captain puppet, which I'm so fucking disappointed I didn't get to see more of. That thing looked class. yeah, it's kind of like, oh yeah, you were like a one-off thing that I'm guessing had more relevance. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder whether there's people in there who didn't actually appear in the anime as well, but.
Okay.
I'll let somebody else, or maybe me pick it over at a later date.
Yeah.
Onwards to Wacky TV Na Na Na, second season, episode 12, Out of Control, The Subterranean Railway. The first of two episodes this week involving a minecart chase.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Back in fashion.
Yeah, from that film E.T.
Yeah. before we die, before we fall into a precipice at the end of this like broken underground railway, just tell me the name of that film because it'll haunt me. Otherwise, let me know. Please.
So the entire episode is them traveling in a, it's a minecart and also one of those hand pump.
It's a minecart in front of the, oh crap, we had this trouble before, we can't remember what the fuck
they're called. No, we don't know what they're called.
A hand car.
Hand car, that's it, yes.
It's probably just hand car, yeah.
And they say, oh, it would be much easier if we found this a lot earlier. And then, yeah, then it becomes this long conversation of trying to remember the film's name and, laughing.
Your man giving out to him is like, you're not pumping hard enough when he's not pumping at all. No, pump slower, pump the other way. And it's like, how do I make it go the other way? I don't really know.
Yeah.
Laughing,
eventually... one of them thought it was E.T. He goes, no, is it Indiana Jones? Indiana Jones is the other one with the rock.
Yeah, it has a minecart as well. It's like, all right.
Oh.
Different film, but all right, okay.
And they end up in the subway, running along the actual train tracks.
It's like, go faster. Faster than that. From prior time. They also pass on the metro platform the probably the most miserable looking banana man I've ever seen in the show so far.
I thought that was the guy who runs the network.
What's it again? I haven't seen him in a while for a guy who he was.
Yeah.
Because he has the TV logo banana beside him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
I mean, if it wasn't him, I'm thinking very poorly of that.
My point still stands.
No, you're quite right. I mean, he used to dodge fucking Donald Trump all day. No wonder he's miserable.
And we leave them being chased by a train.
Mm. And calling out to the chief to flag them down.
Yes. To grab their hands and pull them over. I assume that's probably like some sort of campaign as to like what you should do if you accidentally fall on the railway track, the lines they're saying.
Oh, like reach up or something. Yeah.
Pull them over the white line.
Mm. Faster, damn it.
Right, that's that taken care of. What's up next? It is Fruits Basket, episode 13. How have you been, my brother?
I'm alright. How are you?
Okay, so when it did, it's like, oh, like the little lead in the episode, Haru finds out a secret about your man that she didn't know before. And I was just like, well, the title's given it a fucking way, hasn't it? And also I kept reading the title like Cam Clark as Liquid Snake. Brother! You know?
Everything should have Toei naming convention, episode naming conventions, because that way if you miss an episode, you can just look at the title and you get all caught up.
I suppose, yeah, it does save a bit of time there.
Great commotion, the embarrassing brother Ayame Suma arrives.
I'm all caught up, yeah.
Okay, yeah, there you go, that's how you go. Because while I'm picking vegetables, Toro's accosted by a snake! Oh, don't worry, it's a Zodiac's pig, and it's Yuki's brother Ayame.
Fucking worry, it's crawling up her dress. That's not cool.
Yeah, well, don't worry in the sense that's going to, like, you know, bite you or whatever. That just worry about him being a very eccentric weirdo.
Yeah, I guess don't worry about any perviness because actually he's like super gay. Like, is he the most gay character so far?
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
We get the stories about them in high school, like, then, you know. Shameless.
Yes, entirely.
Yeah. But she's here, and Yuki does not get on very well with him. So before there's any more, before a fight breaks out, just whisked away, or rather, Ayami whisks Toru away. How about you, Miko, talk somewhere alone? But no, that's much worse. Don't go with him. Oh, they're already gone. Oh, what am I going to do about this? And Shigure's not helping at all because, there's me and Hattori and Ayame were just like, we're the Mawadachu trio, we're our three best friends who were.
Also, two of us
are very similar, and one of us is like kind of the brains of the operation, keeps us both of us guys in check. But unless we are three best friends.
I did like any time he interacts with his brother, it's kind of like they just make gay jokes like constantly. It's like, oh well, why can't you stay in his room? It's like, oh, he doesn't let me sleep. Oh, you know, they're just like just fucking with each other constantly, just shooting the shit. It comes across that they're kind of old friends about it, so it works quite well.
Yeah. But Toru and maybe break bread or break gyozas in the gyoza restaurant. And while Ayame says, oh, I wanted to come by and meet this Toru girl I keep hearing about so much. He really wants to call his sister Yuki because, you know, while they both live outside of the Soma estate, they don't see each other very often because unless they don't see eye to eye. Or more so, Yuki does not like having Ayame around. Whereas Ayame wants to kind of close that rift, but he doesn't really quite know how to approach it.
Yeah, and like he doesn't mention the specific circumstances. You see the flashback of him like spurning away his brother's advances, like for comfort or something, back when he was younger. And he's kind of like blaming himself when he was a younger kid. It's like, I didn't want my brother like either riding on his coattails, or he didn't support him when he could have, and he's regretting it now because it's caused this rift to grow between them. And he does love his brother. It's just that he didn't act like that when he was younger, for whatever reason. We don't get the specifics. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, things like maybe Toru, of course, you know, with Toru being around has been a change in the lad. So maybe we'll be able to kind of come to an accord with a little bit of your help. And some of your mother's sage advice, because she's full of these like sage advice from her mom from back in the day. And it's like, well, try and be people like halfway through it. Don't try and compose your circle of friends or whatever like that with people who just agree with you or hold the same views, because you're probably not going to get that in your life. It's very hard to come by, in fact.
Yeah, so meeting them halfway is more so giving them some concessions so that they can do the same for you, and maybe you'll bridge that gap.
Yeah, and also enriches your life.
It's
a lot more fun to try and pick as many like ideas and experiences into your own experience as you can. It mostly works out. I don't know.
it seems to work out in the end, but as you're seeing it happen, it looks like it's really, really not working out. He's still hanging out at the house, looking through the old family photo album and trying to reminisce about times. And by doing that, he's bringing up all the fucking like dodgy stories of him being in school.
Just embarrassing shit. Like, you know, oh, your hair was so long in high school. How did you manage that? Well, that's a funny story. And he's just saying, now, Ayame, so my, told you once, I told you a thousand times to trim those, to shave off those sideburns.
You're goddamn hippie.
He's like, well, why don't well, you don't know about me, principal, is that I'm actually from a member of a royal family. He goes off on this whole spiel, like, it derives from some, like, ancient
tradition based off their religion and stuff. And the principal just like, just fucking leave. Just go. I gotta go.
But on the third day, Hayamapa came down from the mountain. I'm gonna go now. You grow here as long as you want.
Then he talks, and his brother's kind of like, the fuck, dude? Cause his brother was initially like, oh fuck, I didn't know this story. But every time, like, the story, like, lets him down. It's like, oh, you know, the one time we went on a school trip and all the lads went to, like, the pleasure district. I mean, like, we didn't go cause we were over that shit at that stage. But then I defended them by saying that it's like, and I get this really rousing speech where it was like, oh, you can't blame them for the youthful indiscretion. They just have these urges about sexuality and stuff. And we can't really fault them for that. So everyone, direct your sexual energy towards me. I will be your, I'll do all the stuff. I'm a bottom. Right in front of like the PTA kind of thing. And it's just like, dude, no, you can't do that. But his brother's like, yeah, just freaking out. It's like, my God, what the hell? But how am I related?
Thankfully, Hatchery comes along and says, hey, I mean, you gotta get that. You need it back in your shop. By the way, you run a business. Did you forget that? I did, briefly.
He runs a shop that sells maid
Dreams
uniforms
of men.
and maid uniforms and nurses uniforms. And I've forgotten the third fucking sexual fetish. But that one anyway. Oh, dear. Yeah. He sells the dreams for men.
Yeah. But nonetheless, like, he feels that he shared all his stuff with his brother, and it could be more embarrassing him. But he feels like he is seeing things from his point of view. And Hatchery says, like, Yuki, like, you know, he's dumb, but he's not stupid. You know, he's probably got his reasons, and, you know, he's got to, like, find out what reasons are to understand where he's coming from, as Toru's mom's advice later on. And yeah. And as a sense of all you get about Ayame, like, he fucks up a lot, but he is a fairly sound guy underneath it all.
There's some, like, depth and nuance to him, but he's just such a fucking loudmouth fucking, like, he's the loudest motherfucker in the room. So it's not going to come across that he has these kind of deeper feelings and insecurities about him.
Yeah, I always quite liked him in the comic because he just he kind of, like, it's just the spotlight falls on him if he comes into a room. which, you know, it can be a detriment as well sometimes to take a force off of characters. But, yeah. You know, I think it's just, it gives a lot of, like, energy to a scene. So it's a welcome addition.
Righty ho. Next up, we've got Bungo Stray Dogs, Season 3, Episode 37, Echo. Our second minecart chase. And also Bungo Stray Dogs back to being. I was like, oh yeah, Bungo Stray Dogs is known for its extremely kick-ass fights.
Yep.
That is what we get in this episode.
I generally prefer the comedy stuff to the fights, but the fights are very nice, and so is this. I did like the build-up, because they've been building this fucking team up forever.
Oh, what did the dream team, you know, they're from two different sides of the law, but, man.
Their powers combined.
They are the dysfunctional, like, buddy cop duo. One's a loose cannon, one's want to do it by the book, but together they're unbeatable.
Yes, and they're both unduly influenced by Dazai. And, yeah, by the end he's quite happy with his influences on them. But, yeah, they're chasing after Pushkin in the minecart.
Pushkin's got the fucking place rigged to explode a bunch.
Well, that's because he's a massive coward, as is revealed by the Earth, as he admits
himself.
Yeah,
that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
But I did like your man complaining, like, while he's, like, surfing on a half tiger boy, it's kind of like, dude, you're really not fun to ride.
Yeah, stop complaining. Yeah, but he eventually manages to shake them off, and they have to face off against Igor Goncharov, the long-haired man we've seen in the past few episodes.
Mostly in this episode, I think we've seen the most of him, where he seems to be in the same shipping container restaurant as friggin'
Theodore.
Yeah.
Yes, except of course, that was an illusion.
That was nice. I did like how that was shot. Because the kind of when they pulled the camera back, I was like, yes. Oh, so they were hearing the same thing, which meant the same thing, which meant they were having a conversation. That's actually pretty good.
Yes. I don't know who that illusion was for beyond the people reading or watching the
story. Well, it was definitely for like guys like Pushkin, because Pushkin was like, dude, what the fuck are you listening to the radio for? Come on, we got shit to do. And he's like, no, I have to hear, I want to listen to my music. I'm not coming to help you until I finish
decorating that room in exactly the same way as the location Theodore was.
I think it's just because he fancied Theodore, and it was just like, I got to be in the same kind of opulence he is. But by opulence, I mean like the Starbucks down the road kind of thing. But, you know, still, whatever.
Yes, and his power is the precipice. Is it the precipice?
Precipice.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which allows him to control Earth. And they're in a mine. What are they going to do? Well, initially, they think they've got him when they basically, he like whips Atsushi around on Rashomon
So, yeah, you can't...
So he can get faster and faster and faster so that Ivan can't see him. Which also...
Well, also, he's not touching up the earth, so he can't know what direction the attack's coming from. Yeah.
But then Ivan just starts randomly spinning rocks to protect him. But then, meanwhile, Rashomon shoots up through the giant stone golem he's made, apparently killing him. But it turns out that was also a golem. He was actually inside the golem.
And he wasn't stabbed when the main golem was stabbed.
Yeah, and he turns and he's stabbed, and because he's injured Atsushi's now got the virus as well.
Mm.
And he turns the ground to mud, and they're sinking in quicksand.
Mm. They have a whole thing when they're going on about they're sinking into quicksand as well. It's like, talk about their previous fights and how, like, how I hated you because you did everything I wanted, man. Like, you were respective of Dazai, my old mentor, you had everything I wanted, that's why I hated you for. And actually, she was like, you think you want what I want? I thought you had it all, but you don't want what I want. I, for most of my life, have been, like, degraded and despised by my so-called father figure. And while it may have given me, like, the motivation I want to try and change the world, you know, because I was told so that I was worthless, but I have worth in that I can go save people. But since he passed away, I thought that'd be the end of it. But he's sort of hanging around in my mind, still kind of haunting me.
Yeah, like the way he says it, like, he died, so it's not like I can get, like, revenge, or not like I can prove it to him now.
Yeah, in fact, I can see him right there behind you, and he's reminding me of what I need to do to get out of here, and after the guy was like, dude, that's way more metal than I am. You go punch the guy.
Also, Akutagawa can see the ripples that the dead man is making in the water.
Mm. So he's like,
well, he's pretty goth, so yeah, okay.
That's badass, man. Okay.
So yes, I'm gonna wrap you in my superpower.
So okay, the tiger's claws can like cut through Rashomon, but then Rashomon can fill the space up inside the cut? Is that how they combine their stuff?
I don't know entirely. I think Akutagawa is the guy who's realized that Atsushi went the where tigers pushed can cut through abilities.
Yes.
Presumably Dazai has as well because of a similarity to his ability.
Okay.
And so yeah, they basically half the mud has disappeared while Ivan's had his back turned. And, he appears to be like cutting space and like hiding in it and riding the whip of Rashomon.
Well, it's all like it's a perfect attack because Rashomon says that devoured space ability where it can consume matter. And I have a punch as you can now hit things and consume both physical matter and space and also any ability to occupy that space. So you can just
Golem was like, obviously you cut it and then he just it's made out of rock still when you cut it apart, so he just reforms it up, but
he's negating the power as he hits him. So
yes.
He can't put it back together again.
Meanwhile, while this is all happening outside, the base is being evacuated and they're like, there's three vans come out. Dazai's like, no, they're just a distraction, heading to the distraction, cause that's what I do. There's a guy in a hood being marched out with various guys with machine guns. There, that's another distraction.
Yeah, there's like so many distractions going off in various directions from into the woods.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
He decides that the hiker is actually Fyodor. But it turns out he's just a hiker with the grenades in his mouth. He does look like curses. Meanwhile, out of the base comes Pushkin. And not all, but a large amount of the Port Mafia and the Art Detective Agency are waiting for him.
I'll release the curse and I promise never to do it again. And it's like, well, if he's going to promise to just be nice from now on, I'm sure we can forgive him.
That was the other end of the buddy cop film. It was like, you want to punch him? No, after you. You punch him. We'll both punch him.
One, two, three.
And Ivan's explained that the reason you've not been able to hack and find out what we're up to is because we were communicating via the record requests on the classical music channel.
because each one was a different signal for a different command. And it's just like, well, we know the signal, so you can't really block the airwaves or anything. So
He's been in a different cafe all along.
Yes, and we see him, Fyodor, being very happy and smug. That
He's like, yes, they're not as formidable as I thought. Next time we meet, I will defeat them for sure. This was the test.
Yes, and as he's walking out, Dazai's like, going somewhere.
You haven't paid your time, bud. Come on.
And this, it's where his face drops, because you never really see that look on his face ever, no matter what goes on. But
and
now
he was coming out like, he was walking out of there with super cockiness. It was like, I mean, like, between me and a couple of guys, we managed to kick their ass pretty much. So if I actually put my fucking back into it and actually put myself in there, I'd probably be able to do it. And then it's like, wait, you were just there listening to me be cocky and shit? Oh no, I look like a real prick.
How'd you find me? Oh, this has been a good impression of detective work. Also, my good friend F. Scott Fitzgerald recently bought a very high-tech, cutting-edge like surveillance software and equipment. Give me a little hand as well. Hi there.
Yeah, it's great that the smuggest man in the show is defeated by the other two smuggest men in the show.
Yeah, one's doing it like the casual thing, the other one's also being casual, and it's like, listen, dude, you robbed me, and I don't give a fuck, but you can't spend that money now, so I'm giving you up to the government, and the government's also there to go like, yeah, nice job, boys, we'll take it from here.
One of them, though, does die.
One of them tries to cuff him and just gets fucked up somehow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's
all of his blood comes out,
Whatever his power is, Deadeye doesn't know how it works either, but he just knows to... Probably don't go near him. Just let him walk away. Just walk him into the van.
He's got his hands in his head, got guns on him. That's about all we can do right now.
Like, don't touch him, but, you know, by all means, you can shoot him if he tries anything, because he probably can't stop that. So just he'll go quietly. Just go with it.
And, yeah, he goes quietly, and then they have a party to celebrate. Rampo's escaped the book. I do like that he mentions the guy with the stylish hat is still in there beating up all the criminals.
Yeah, I identified all 500 criminals in the narrative, and he's just there fighting everyone until he gets out. He's doing the video game thing of, like, if I just kill everyone in Skyrim, I've won.
He's having a great, great time in there. Pushing guys with gravity powers.
No, he doesn't have his powers in it, so he's doing it at
all. Right, oh yeah.
It's going to take him ages. Dear.
I like the fact that Rampo doesn't know his name. It's just that guy in a stylish hat.
you clash with the...
That attractive young man is still fighting in there, yes.
You clash with mafia executives on innumerable occasions. You can't even remember the guy's name.
Smartest guy in the room does not remember people's name. Yeah,
well, it's not relevant to the case. So it doesn't really matter to him anymore.
And then we get like a little bit of a callback to the first light novel story we had adapted when... he's kind of learning that, like, oh yeah, Oda was the guy in the Port Mafia who gave up killing, and he's like, oh, you can see how that rubbed off on him, and now that's rubbed off on Atakagawa.
Yeah. Well, what I really liked is that all Atsushi's kind of earnest appeals, you know, trying to appeal to the good in him in Atakagawa, never worked up to this point. It's only by revealing that you and me are as miserable as each other, and that's why we can be allies. That's what brings him on side, kind of.
Like, yeah, you're jealous of me, but you really shouldn't be, because we're both kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're stray dogs, but just need to find a home.
Yeah.
That's the name of the manga.
Yes.
And they say it. They say the name of the show. I did like the bet as well. Like, is it like 6 months or something like that? I'm going to come fight you and kill you in 6 months. And he's like, on one condition, you can't kill anyone in those 6 months.
Yeah. Which is well...
It's going to make it difficult when you're an assassin. Yeah.
The guy into it a little bit in the last episode was like, well, no wonder when Dazai, like, just want to clear you, want a shot here, because all you talk about is wanting to kill people. Like, that's all you do. That's all you know how to do. So that's why he got tired of you. And I think I was initially just really pissed off at that, but... he kind of accepted it, like, yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Ashley's decided to get, well, try not killing people for 6 months and maybe you might
see how you like it.
A little bit of what he was trying to explain to you or convey to you.
Because he knows he can't really delay this guy trying to kill him, so he might as well see if he can get him to fucking learn it. Yeah.
Yeah, because if you were so similar to Dazai in his youth, then maybe by kind of following in his footsteps or something similar to it, you might be able to see in what ways he's always able to surpass you and exceed you, and then you might find a way to exceed your own abilities.
I do like the fact that going back to Fyodor is like initially like his face breaks and looks forlorn, but then when he realizes that Dazai's outwitted him and now Fitzgerald's involved, his face kind of changes to like one of like, oh, the puzzle has just become more interesting for him now. And that's probably
It was more so he's fighting from a losing position and that's going to make it fun.
Yeah.
If you know anything about Dostoevsky, being in prison isn't really going to stop him doing shit.
No.
I
haven't seen the last of that guy by a long shot. It's just how far are we away from another season of this is the question.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, and I guess his power also like kind of, does his only work on touch is stopping people's powers working?
Yes.
There's a range to it.
So it's the question of like whose power would kick off first. And I was just looking at what the government's guy and his power works on touch as well. So, yeah, that's the.
But a gun still works on him. So
that is true. Yes, a gun will still work on him.
A gun point.
But yeah, he can't use his power to. Yes, because he gets information from the things he's touched. So that's he can't touch him to find out what his power is because he'll. Explode when he touches it.
I mean, maybe actually, I punch him in the back at the same time. it might like double cancel out.
I really like this series when it's doing the things I like.
Yeah, no, when it's fucking on, it's a great show.
And I think that's probably nothing to do with the show. I think it's probably to do with the original creator's strength as a writer in doing.
No, you're right. The writing is great and the characterization is great, but I really like, like you say, I kind of forgotten that, oh yeah, this show can do
I'm saying the opposite direction. I'm saying the strength of the writing is the writer.
Oh, is enhanced by the show, is it?
I'm saying he's better at writing comics than he is prose.
When you've someone to bounce like the visuals off, yes. And you're not just writing two guys, like, when you're not just writing a fucking talking heads thing. Yeah.
Not so when it's like making actually often quite clever like literary allusions. And then making me just go and look up this writer and think, oh, so that's why that's funny, or that's why these guys interact with each other in the way that they do. That's why Natsumi Soseki is like held in such high regard, because pretty much every author going in 20th century literature holds him in high regard. That's why he's the boss of the bosses that everyone listens to.
Yes. I wonder when they bring in Agatha Christie and the other people, they'll draw on him being miserable in London. Because that's a big part of his history as well.
Yeah. It'd be like, you know, back in the day before I founded the agency, I ran into these pretty nasty characters. In Europe. And they're back.
Farewell once again to Bungo Stray Dogs. I can't remember what the gap was between this and the last series. I can have a quick look. I'm on the wiki at the moment. So.
I wonder if I'll remember to skip the fucking light novel next time it comes back.
Was it a year and a half?
Episode 24 was December 2016. So.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, okay.
We may have a bit of a wait.
But
there was a movie in between, so if they're not doing a movie, then...
Right.
Yeah. Hoping not another movie anyway, because that movie was... It was fine.
It wasn't light novel, was it?
Yeah. Whereas... I think it was original material, wasn't it?
It didn't feel like an adaptation of a light novel, is what I probably should say.
I can't remember when there is like other versions of it, but I think it started off as a film.
Okay.
This could also be like the first two seasons though and only have a 13-week gap. Who knows?
Come back soon. Whatever that is.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much of the comic there is. That could be the more pressing issue.
But if you have like Agatha Christie and them, you know, who are like characters we've known about since at least the second season of this, and they probably have some material banks that they can.
Considering, I believe what happens next is more Dostoevsky nonsense.
Oh, okay.
I believe he has a second conspiracy.
Yeah. I guess considering that the first third of this particular season was taken up with a light novel thing to take
yes,
up to.
Yes, just maybe. Shove another light novel in there, and then you're ready to do 8 episodes of...
That'll make up the space that I can skip. Better remember next time.
So I'm just thinking, yeah, according to this, the latest volume was out in May, and that took us to chapter 73, and I guess we just wrapped up chapter 53. There was, and we started around chapter 38, maybe? So we didn't have that many chapters. Yeah, so there's probably enough out there to do another season. And then you'd have to take a long wait, break again. Yeah, particularly if you chuck in, again, another light novel at the front. So I suspect, as much as anything else, I think those light novel adaptations are a practical consideration rather than going the One Piece approach of filling your entire episodes with flashbacks. Talking of One Piece... One Piece Season 11, Episode 891, Climbing Up a Waterfall, A Great Journey Through the Land of Wano's Sea Zone. A lot less flashbacks this episode. It was mainly all new material, with a flashback as to reminding you who we're off to see in Wano.
I guess it has been a while since they've stayed in it, yeah.
Yeah. So this is basically the sequence where they're heading to Wano and they've got to go up a waterfall to get to Wano, and the sea animation changes, the best bit is when an octopus climbs on board the ship and they take so long to notice it's there, but it keeps on cut. Every time there's a reaction shot, they cut part of the way through. It's not like he's the last one, he's like amongst the crew. They get the reaction shot of the octopus. I was like, oh, I'm so long since I've seen Carrot, I forgot quite how much she's like Luffy in terms of just being just full of glee and no sense of her own safety. They see these carp. There's like a lot of discussion over whether you can eat carp and how you cook carp, and you shouldn't just like eat wild carp, you should only eat cultivated carp. That was Carrot's suggestion. But Luffy's determined he's going to capture one of these giant carp, and we're going to have it as a meal when we meet everyone else, even though we've ignored Kinemon's orders to contact him before heading into Wano. Basically, Luffy just gets incredibly impatient, and they go up this waterfall. They manage to get up because he like hooks him, he ties himself with his legs to the front of the Sunny and grabs hold of two of the carp and he pulls them up. Because they need to do this because the Sunny's like barely keeping itself together. It's about to fall apart. There's lots of shots of it very badly patched up in places. I was like, I don't think in the comic that Frank has got to the Sunny yet and seen what a mess they've left in.
He's gonna freak. I mean, like, he's probably gonna take 5 goddamn minutes to fix it.
That's true, yes.
I was 5 minutes ago spent doing something else, like, I don't know, being manly somewhere.
Yeah, singing about being manly, sure.
And it ends with the Sunny somehow catapulting everybody but Luffy off it, and Luffy sinking to the bottom of the sea.
The end.
The
end.
End
of show.
All dead. All died.
And then we get the trailer of the new animation style and the new look, and it's very Tiger Mask double in terms of them using that filter to make everything look more hand-drawn.
The thick lines kind of job? I do enjoy that style.
I wouldn't be against it now, because like, I remember when they changed the animation style before, like the kind of heavier shading, and how all the women got very, very long. That kind of thing. I kind of miss the old one that looks like, you know, all the watercolor backgrounds and stuff like that. Yeah.
New opening next week by the guy who did the original opening.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Something special.
Yeah, well, they're going all out to make it special, but annoyingly, apparently, in a short while, they'll then have to, like, go into a weird side filler arc in order to promote the movie.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I don't know. I guess you can do that by not having any of the, to keep it in continuity and not have any of the Straw Hats in it and just involve, like, okay, what are Smoker and Tashigi, how do they end up in this story? But I bet they won't do that. I bet they'll just go, this is a story which happened in the past. We've no idea when it happened because it can't have happened in the past.
There's no place.
There's literally nowhere in continuity. Yes, where this will fit.
Is there like a weekend that the Straw Hats like took off? It's like, no, it's been all fucking go for years.
Yeah. They've been split up in multiple ways. In multiple. I guess the only time is they would have had to have like taken a detour between Punk Hazard and Dressrosa, but I think that's how they did the last movie set up.
Yeah, unless it was set immediately after the last movie. It could be.
Mm.
For the movie-going audience.
The last one was after Dressrosa, because the lead-in had a lot of Bartolomeo in it. And then they met a woman who used to be part of a weird biker gang with him in her past.
Mm.
So I'm sure they'll figure something out. And we'll all go and see Stampede because it looks fucking amazing. Even though the trailer kind of made me feel like I'd seen the last fight of the film. But, I don't think it is, because I think it looks like it's all the big fight against the robot, which is in the trailer, seems to be all the other supernovas apart from Luffy, Law, and Zoro getting beaten up by that giant robot.
Right.
Well, you know what's going to get punched in the face, but how is it going to get punched in the face?
Yes.
And that's what you're here for.
And yes, but also you see it and you're like, oh, okay, that's why those unlikely group of people are going to have to team up to take it down. It's like, that's how bad this man is. Then, next up in Toei, no Pretty Cure for Niall, because he couldn't get to see it yet. I got to see Real Solger episode 15, rather. King of the Deep Sea, in which we continue our mini arc with our new gold member of the team, because he still hasn't joined, Canalo. This time we learn that he's got a little sister, and also that they live under the sea, literally in, what's the palace called from the Urashima Taro story?
Oh, the Dragon God's Palace.
Yeah, that's where they live. Because it turns out there was like something in 1,000 years ago caused a schism in the Ryu tribe, and they split into the land Ryu tribe and the sea Ryu tribe. And, Mosa Rex, I think is his Dino Knight, which is one of those giant crocodile dinosaurs.
Yeah, I assume a Mosasaur.
Yeah, and he's like, he's basically like telling him, he's where they've got the idea that they can't trust the surface Ryu tribe members. Our heroes, the three main ones who we first met appear to have no idea of this schism, though, the black member, the oldest one had heard of it. Mm. And I don't think we know how old he is yet. We know red and I guess pink and blue are around 300 years old. Green, I guess, is younger than them. I guess Canelo's around 300 as well. And we meet his sister Canelo's, as we mentioned, is looking for a wife on the surface. They don't have any problems with the surface humans. It's the surface Ryu tribe they've got problems with. And his little sister says, well, I'm going off and find a husband as well. And he's like, you can't, you're too young. And she's like, I'm 102. and so he has to go look for her. He finds her and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, brother. I'll go back under the sea. and acts like the really cute little sister, basically winding her big brother around her little finger. And he believes her, and then she just runs off and is like hiding. Oh, ho, 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 what a stupid big brother. And then she gets kidnapped by Creon. I should point out that for all intents and purposes, she is a young girl, so therefore she's wrong. She can't go and look for a husband at 102 years old.
I assume it's like 102. She's actually like 12.
Yeah, she is.
Take out that middle number. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and Creon kidnaps her, and he's going to force Rio Gold to fight Rio Red. He's also made a magnet. He's made a magnet Minosaur from a YouTuber who has a YouTube channel all about magnets, who's just been dumped by his girlfriend. That's what made him miserable. And so basically this Minosaur's power is to make people who are very close to each other have the same polarity, and so they'll fly apart. And when I say fly apart, I mean Kuma and the Straw Hats Sabaody flying apart, because when he does it to the rest of the real sagas, they fly to various ends of Japan, and it's left with the Red and the Gold on their own to fight, because they have no connection whatsoever, and so they're not repelled when they get affected. And so this is when Creon comes out. He says, "Ah, Gold, I've got your sister. If you want her back, you've got to beat up Red." And so he does. He uses his power first to entwine Red. He's now in his mecha. So he entwines him in a metal spiral, and then he uses his second power to shoot him with electricity. Creating an electromagnet. He's changed the polarity of him, so now all the other Rangers can come back and combine and beat him up. But before that happens, he's like, "Well, I did what you said. I've attacked him. Can I have my sister back?" And Creon's like, "Oh, fair enough. You have your sister back." And then the boss turns up and goes, "What are you doing, Creon? We're the villains. Don't just give him the sister back because you said you could." So that gives you the idea that Creon's like not entirely bad. He's a mushroom of honor. He sticks by his word. And so, yes, the polarity is reversed. They can combine, they blow up the monster, the magnet's YouTuber is fine. Brother and sister go back to the sea. They get mad at their dinosaur, because they're like, "Hey, it seems so bad, those surface Rio tribe." Because, "No, they're just lying to you. It's a trap. They're trying to trick you." And then the little sister's like, "Oh, you're so terrible, Mosa. I hate you. I'm going back to the surface again for next episode." And so they'll be back on the surface next episode. And maybe we'll find out exactly why there was a schism. And exactly, I think her question is like, what is the Rio tribe's purpose? Which is probably a good question. Also, it looks like the new general can turn into like some sort of submarine.
Neat.
I'm going to guess he's probably going to get killed fairly quickly because Creon hates him. And he's okay with Wizaru. Wizaru was not in this episode. Yeah, it was a lot of fun again. They did the other thing this way, because I said last week how the UE's like, they've got the character like acting like a dad. They now had the dad acting like UE in places. And it was good to have like another wacky YouTuber be the source of misery to be turned into a monster. Then we've got Kitaro, episode 62, The Four Generals of Underworld Kurubozu's Trap. Just realised I meant to rewatch this because I wasn't paying attention the first time. So somebody else describe what happens in this episode.
Well, what's worse than one rat man? An even worse, more evil rat man.
The episode opens as it ends with herself coming up to the Gegege forest with a box of donuts for the lads, and Kitaro and Nitsumi Otago arguing. What's their big argument? I think he stole the ham off his noodles or something.
He took his slice of chashu pork from his ramen.
Oh, okay. My bad.
You don't never do that to another guy's ramen.
It's not over all the other shit he did. It's over that really tiny thing, petty thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, well, like he was going to save that till the end and everything. I get it. I get
it's like, that's it. We're done. Fuck, I don't know why I hang out with you. I don't know why you hang out with me either. I fucking hate your guts. Well, I hate your guts too. But I said, oh no, they're having a falling out. And then the rest of the yokai are like, oh, don't mind them. They won't do this shit all the time. And they always make life complicated. Don't know quite why though. Like, when Nezumi Otoko is a real piece of shit. Everyone knows it. He knows it. He admits it actually quite often. But Kiro, he still comes back around to him every time. I just don't know why. He's kind of holding him. But let's be Otoko, off in a foul humor, you know, he's gets wind of a new scheme or gets onto him. There's been like a kiss of the water running red out of taps and in rivers and in ponds and stuff, and it smells god awful. It's disgusting altogether. And a floating painting was up behind him, and Alva was this like grotesque, like kind of
more rat-like man
in a black robe. This is the Kuro Bozu or black monk, and he says, "Rat man, Nezumi Otoko, you're a rat man like me. I got a proposition for you. You can't a man with an eye for a deal like you could not turn down." And so there's a quick scheme of making these filters you can put on your taps and stuff that will purify this otherwise foul water and make billions. And of course, Kishiro got in the case then because this may involve the Kuro Bozu, which we have reminded that is one of the four generals of Donorot. He has to bring back as a favor to Yama. And it's also as attention of Rei Isurugi, or a guy from the other series who was like hunting down these yokai to get revenge on him for the guys who burned down his village.
This guy isn't even one of the four generals, but his tribe were the guys who put this guy down in the first place.
Yeah, put him on inside in the joint. So he's got a score set up with this guy. What's it now? I'm getting vaguely.
This is the bit where I remember the ending. I can't remember now. As you were saying, I remembered the water scam. Yeah, so he captures Nezumi Otoko, and he's questioning him and like saying, "It's like, is this what is this how you expect a half yokai to make his way in the world?" And Ratman thinks he can just like hold out and Kuro Bozu will turn up and rescue him, but instead Kitaro and Nekomasume show up because the crows are carrying him and having like a conversation about like, why do you always help him, Kitaro?
There's a specific crow that alerts them as well. It's like a crow with a haircut. I'm guessing that's like a character crow.
I mean, there's lots of really good faces in this episode. Then they get into a fight. Then Kuro Bozu shows up.
They can't actually harm him because that's not his actual form.
Initially, like, your man's like, I might try and pass down the secret of your weakness. And it's like, it's water. And that's why he pollutes water.
It's
that's not fully my weakness. Obviously didn't pass it on. Why water?
True form. And Nezumi Otoko realizes what his true form is. It's that painting he wanders around with. pisses all over it.
I
could have not used it that. That would have been great. Yeah.
You like water, huh? But I have all the water in the world. At least what's inside my bladder. My surprisingly full bladder just gushes out on me like a fire hose.
Gross.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know the Kitoshu name, but he Rei knows that this wasn't the guy who destroyed the village. So therefore he's happy to let Kitaro take it back to hell.
But yeah, he doesn't have a personal beef with this.
But by the way, Kiro, I hate you. Kiro's like, I hate you too.
You're a real piece of shit. You don't give people the chance to change. That's kind of like his thing of Ratman. He's like, yeah, listen, he's a piece of shit and he'll fuck you over, but you gotta give people the chance to be better.
Yes. Kiro was saying it might not have been the easiest thing to do, but like to try to just like to outright dismiss them or discriminate against them, like down that way bigotry lies, and I don't want to become that kind of person.
Yeah. And then we get a little flashback to as they were flying to rescue him, and then he explains that when Nanashi had beaten him down and he was ready to give up, it was Nozomi Otoko who picked him back up and got him back on his feet so he could win, because Nozomi Otoko, whatever happens to him, he always tries to survive. He never gives up.
He has admirable traits, yes. That kind of thing, yeah.
Mm.
And then we go back to the present time where Neko Masumi decides that men are such a hassle.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Well, the girls are well ahead of this. I noticed that even the sandwich, he also has gotten in on a smartphone game, and I guess they've all got their WhatsApp group together. Because, you know,
I think it's just the sandwich, because she seems really up on shit. Like, she's got to keep track of her stocks and everything, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's just her. I know that's like herself and Mana and Nick and Musa. We got a little WhatsApp group. They're sitting around the table discussing, the adventure of the week, and they're just probably texting away to each other going, these fucking idiots.
Yeah. I wonder how much of that writing is because Miyumi Tanaka's playing her. And I wonder how much that's just how many Yumi Tanaka is. Because I get that impression whenever I see her in things as herself. Is that she acts a lot younger than her age. As do a lot of those One Piece voice actors.
Yeah.
Next time on Kitaro, the Star Festival of Love, the Yokai Flower.
Nurikabe falls in love. Aww.
Don't say aww, because his attitude to love has been proven to be quite retrograde in previous episodes.
But it's fallen them. They're bound to love me. I'm going to give him a great big hug.
But yeah, it'd be good to see some of the other guys get an episode again.
Hmm. Yeah.
In fact, we go like, back to the plot, back to serious, back to the stakes. Like, you know, no one mentioning the fact that Kitaro needs to get these generals, otherwise they're kind of fucked. And then still back to bullshit next episode. It's great.
Well, this general was, he was a bit more sneaky than the last one.
Less about power, more about, I'm going to do it through an intermediary. The exact same thing I did before. That's my smarter plan.
Well, we can't all be a snake, turtle, tiger monster.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're like a shifty, evil rat man.
Who's actually a pain.
But not that shifty evil rat man, a different evil rat man.
Righty-ho, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go JoJo. Be back here next week for King of Kings. And also, I guess there'll be some new things we may watch. I've already watched some new things. I'm going to not recommend them to you.
Wait, are you going to not recommend them now, or do you want to not recommend them next week?
I'm going to not recommend them now to the pair of you.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
Not recommending to the Abandoned Sacred Beasts.
Right.
It's not bad. It is workmanlike, which is what I was fearing.
Mm.
And I'm also going to not recommend Magical Senpai. And what's the other thing? The other part of its double bill called of shows for creeps. Are You Lost? Turned out they're both shows for creeps. Uh-huh. I will say Magical Senpai has more jokes in it. Are You Lost puts more effort into getting towards the punchline of its joke.
Is this by any chance in the same slot as Nobunaga's Young Bride?
Let me take a look at what was in that slot last week.
Because I think that was also in a slot with some other filth. And I think
Is there a creep slot? What the hell?
Yes. There's always been a creep slot. There's probably multiple creep slots on it later.
I'm just surprised they're all free at a certain time of day. Like, that's the time when people should go into the streets and frolic. Don't worry, their creep shows are on.
Yeah, but like Nobunaga's Young Bride was paired with some other like filth short.
It was three of them in that block.
Yeah. So is this just like a new way of distributing that material now? Just maybe smaller doses are better.
But not back to back, surely.
But three different poisons that for a balanced like your body.
Don't think so. No, I think it's a different slot.
Okay. There's more of them.
One is about the high school magic club, which just involves currently in the first episode one girl who is very bad at doing magic and a guy who made the mistake of looking in to see what was going on in this club and is now forced to be her assistant.
You mean like stage magic, right?
Yeah. Mm. Which a lot of it does not revolve around being creepy, but it is, yes. It is a little creepy. It is a little, and also it's like, oh, this character's got enormous boobs and we're just going to, whenever she moves, her boobs are going to bounce everywhere.
Zero G, yeah.
Okay. Zero G, yeah. And I was like, oh, she should buy a bra, but then we see that she is wearing a bra later on in the episode.
Yeah. Well, you got to distract the audiences and lead your gaze elsewhere while you do magic tricks.
That's true.
That's one way.
The fact that the jokes about her not being very good at magic are funny, and the pigeon stuff in it is pretty, it's not terrible, but yeah, I'm just letting you know what you're in for.
That it's couched in creepiness. Yeah, no, I get you.
Yeah, it is not as creepy, it's not as, there's nothing in Are You Lost which is essentially creepy. It's just creepy that somebody, you suspect, it's the thing where you suspect the motives of the people making it. And you don't have to do much suspecting because I believe it opens up with a picture of somebody's wet crotch.
Cool.
But it's four schoolgirls get stuck on a desert island. I do apologize. That's not the first shot. It's some other shots, but yeah, it's the fourth shot. So they're stuck on a desert island. It's basically, it feels like somebody has been watching and reading Bear Grylls and going, how can I wring every ounce of innuendo out of all these survival skills? Which is why I say it does a lot more work to get to its punchline.
Yeah. It seems to be a remarkably specific thing of someone like fucking marathoning all of Bear Grylls and trying to think of the creepiest jokes they can put in.
Yeah, I mean, neither of these things are super duper creepy. Neither of these are as creepy as Made in Abyss, for example.
Right, okay. I mean, yeah. For some reason, that still flew under people's radar, like, yes. Like shock to me, but yeah.
How? I don't know.
I was like pushing past it. I was like, come on, it can't just be this. And it's like, no, we're going to have at least one an episode.
Because it's well made, yeah. That's why, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I saw people, my parents generally come out from the angle like, this reminds me of when my toddler running around is getting sick and fucking making a mess and things. It reminds me more of that. But
yeah,
the characters,
you can definitely do that. You can definitely have a show that's like, the kids are just comfortable with their own nudity, but some of the kids are like very aware of other people's nudity, and clearly the people making it are very fucking into it.
Well, yeah, I think the
original,
more the original.
I'm not blaming the entire fucking production staff for being creeps. I'm saying the creeps are involved.
Yes. So I was curious about both of these because I was like, on the premise of both was like, these could be things which are entertaining.
Yeah.
They're not entertaining, but I'm just letting you know before you go in that they are. What their purpose is for delivering off color humor.
Mm.
That's it so far. What is coming up this week that had caught my eye? Yeah, a fair amount. A fair amount is starting this week as opposed to next.
Dang it! I was hoping to divvy it up.
Yeah.
Let's look at the calendar and see what they got.
We've got. Got off drive, would it be a bit faster? Dr. Stone.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I keep forgetting that, Tom. Jeez.
That weightlifting show, which I believe is also a short.
Okay.
Well, it's a short. That's even better.
It's a short, that's more likely we'll stick with it.
It may be no more or less for creeps than those two previous things I mentioned.
Yeah.
Fire Force on Fridays. Piri Karako-chan on Saturdays. Vinland Saga on Sundays.
Jeez.
Sundays, okay.
And BEM. I don't know if anyone's announced who've got that yet.
I think Funimation got it.
Okay, in which case we may not have to worry about that at all. I'm fine because I'm sure there'll be plenty to watch. Mm. And continuing, obviously, we've got JoJo's, we've got Kitaro, we've got Wacky TV, Na Na Na. Fruits Basket, is that continuing?
That's continuing, I understand.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's going to like two seasons length, even though they're just calling it first season.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be 52 or so. So they're going to, I guess.
Really? Okay. Wow.
Yeah, but they're getting every bit of that comic. They're not taking any chances after last time, after all of the all of the ire that generated. They're going to do this literally by the book.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, 7th of July would be our cutoff point for next time. Business Fish. Anthony was surprisingly excited by that.
He was excited, very much so. Exuberant.
Really by surprise.
Do you like most majority of that, like, previous episode you did in Dynamite and Rain? It was like, we're probably getting all to watch this.
Yes.
It's about rugby. He likes rugby. Well, yes, but
it does not appear to be about rugby. But technically, I mean, they're keeping it well under their hats that it is about rugby. Well, that's because we pointed out that, yeah, despite you seeming to have less time to watch things than me and Dwayne, you're the one who watches the most stuff.
difference. I have time at work to do these things. I can't do other things.
That is true. I can't do it at work.
I can't quite record the podcast or do other things on my 1 hour lunch break, say. But I am able to, maybe
get an episode
Things sourced to watch on a commute or like maybe on a night shift. I might have maybe a bit more time extra another break here or there because there's extra people around and it's a late shift. It's hard to get through, but it'll help. We'll always appreciate it. So might sneak in some more episodes of stuff in there. And that's how I do it.
No, of course, you never watch things on the job. You wouldn't want to be caught for an official recording that says you're skiving off.
I said on my lunch break. Gosh.
Astralost in Space. That's an hour-long special for its first episode.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Trying to think anything else which caught my eye. I think that was it. Oh, hang on. There's a third series of Book Detective, apparently. That was not showing up before.
Yeah, we slept on that one, didn't we?
Yeah. Did that end up on Crunchyroll?
It didn't end up anywhere, I understand.
I think it might have. I feel like I'd seen it around somewhere, but yeah, it wasn't until after it was already coming out, that kind of way. It somehow passed us by.
Book Detective, though, on the third season now, it's never going to find out who dealt it.
It's on Netflix in Japan.
Netflix.
As Book Detective. His English, official English title is Book Detective. So who knows? Maybe eventually.
I was an idiot when I was in Japan. I should have gotten episodes of this, like, saved on the half of the flight instead of just backy. That was coming anyway. This might never see the light of day.
Exactly. That Grand Bell, but yeah, as I mentioned on the podcast, it's like every trailer I see puts me further and further off it. I think Dr. Stone and Fire Force and Vinland Saga will be plenty. Not going to worry about anything else.
I might check out some other things if I get the chance, but I would like something to jump out and surprise me in the way that, like, Wacky TV Na-Na-Na is kind of like, it's just like, oh, fuck, yeah, this.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably still watch every single short which shows up.
See, that's the thing. Like, a short, you're more likely to. But it's nice when you get something that's like, I wasn't expecting to be talking about this for so long, but then you do because it's great.
Yeah. There's, I think, Old Maidens in your summer season. I think it's going to be on High Dive. So that'd be good. To use that service besides watching Votoms, which is primarily music for lady, which is a good reason to watch it, to use it. But, well, there are good things on there too. I just need to maybe remember that I have it and use it.
Yeah,
more.
I mean, if they had a PS4 app, I would.
Oh gosh, I'd be all over that.
Yeah. Right, I think that's enough of this nonsense. We'll see you again next week for more JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Goodbye.
Bye.
Adios.